Welcome to the Zevil Rebel podcast. I'm your host, Talia Herring, and this is the show where we talk about the trashy habits that brought on climate change and what we can do to rebel against them. Today, I'm so pumped to be speaking with Rebecca, who's the resident storyteller at Tipa Corp, a female-run Israeli startup tackling plastic waste by manufacturing a unique kind of packaging that looks, acts, and feels like regular plastic. Except for one thing, it's fully compostable, which is my favorite kind of plastic. I'm so excited for you to be here. Thank you so much for joining me. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about Tipa Corp and how it works.
Thank you so much for having me. So Tipa Corp innovates and manufactures compostable packaging for the food and fashion industries. And what's sort of unique about the company is that we tried to fit really well into the market that existed. So our packaging is fully compostable. It's made of totally compostable polymers. It's certified. We have a bunch of labs in our office where you can see the packaging break down and turn into compost.
Yeah, I've seen all those videos online. They're so cool.
They're really, really cool. The material is magic, we call it in the office. But the film runs on conventional packaging machinery. It packs food, like dry food, and keeps it fresh. Packs produce and keeps it fresh. Packs fashion in a way that works really well for fashion supply chains. So the company sort of is this amazing combination of incredible technology, but also really, really good business savvy. And I think that's part of what's made them really, really successful.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've seen you guys working with different European brands. And does it also work with small companies, small startups, or mostly big manufacturers?
Yeah, we work with pretty much everyone. We've got companies as big as Waitrose and Gabriella Hearst, and companies that are, I don't want to say as small as, but we have a bunch of small fashion brands and small growers who are using our packaging also.
Mm-hmm. And is it home compostable or is it industrial compostable?
A lot of our films are home compostable. A lot of our laminates are home compostable, and a few of them are industrially compostable.
Mm-hmm.
Our second generation films and laminates are all going to be home compostable. But we have sort of a really, really diverse portfolio of films and laminates that emulate a lot of the qualities of conventional plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are industrially compostable and some of them are home compostable. So it sort of depends on what packaging is the right thing for your product.
Okay, cool. Does Tipa kind of work with the back end of like after use with the composting process, or is it just kind of creating the plastic packaging that will one day be composted, and then companies that are buying Tipa are clearly more interested in figuring out the end of use composting system?
I think that's a bigger project than Tipa or any of our brands are going to be able to tackle. We have a few delivery services, like from small farms or even big farms, that offer take back programs where if they send you a package or a delivery box with Tipa packaging, they'll take it back and put it in their compost. But we have an incredible public affairs team actually that works really, really hard together with governments in the UK and in the US and different kinds of political organizations to sort of jumpstart the composting infrastructure all over the world.
Uh-huh.
In some places, it's more common than others. So like in Italy and in Ireland, they have a lot of really good infrastructure for composting, compostable packaging, compostable trays, compostable cutlery, vegetables and fruit and other organic waste. And other places are sort of catching up. But I don't think that that's a project. I don't think that's a project that our brands or Tipa has taken on by themselves. It's something that we've partnered up with a lot of different organizations to be able to change. But we see that the trend is sort of turning towards using organic waste as a resource instead of throwing it in landfill.
Mm-hmm.
So if your question is sort of about where composting infrastructure is going, I think that there'll be more and more. but we don't take back the packaging.
Is that that's what I was asking. Like, is there educational aspects? But it sounds like you guys are doing that with pushing for local infrastructures and other groups that are already existing to help them, you know, bridge that gap. So that's what I was kind of wondering.
Yeah, all of our films and our laminates are certified so that they can be accepted by the infrastructure that exists. We actually decided to, I think a big part of the decision to move toward home compostable packaging was also to sort of enable end consumers to feel fully confident in putting it in their backyard compost or their home compost or their community compost if they live in a place that doesn't have that infrastructure.
Yeah. I remember growing up and we composted in San Diego, and there was like, we went to frozen yogurt.
San Diego?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a husband yet here?
I do.
Oh, my gosh.
I grew up with Maor.
No way.
Yeah.
They did not compost. How did
you? Okay, so I'm from Calais, and I guess my parents like saw an ad that the city was giving away composting bins, like these big bulky plastic bins, and it was really frustrating to mix it. Now there's ones that you can easily turn, but it was quite the project, right? So I talked about this a lot, that, you know, we went to Costco and we bought all these things that were in all these products that were in very thick plastic packaging and not thinking about that. But then when we had food scraps or hair from the shower, we composted that. It was very silly, right? But it was cool for me to witness. And I remember we went to Yogurtland to get frozen yogurt, and they had compostable spoons. And this is, you know, what, 15 years ago, before there was a lot of bioplastics. And we put it in the compost and never composted. We were so sad because it was in industrial compost. And, you know, if you don't have the temperatures in the water, it's just not going to work. So
exactly.
I felt very lied to in that moment. We just have to wait a lot longer.
Have compostable packaging for that reason. But
yeah,
there are a few different companies that are making incredible products that are industrially compostable, and they don't compost in home compost because of the temperature. They require a really, really high temperature to degrade.
Yeah.
So I do think if you lived in San Francisco now, maybe you'd be able to throw it in.
Which is so funny.
It is. It really is. And it's funny because we have like a third of our organic waste is thrown out. We know that we have tremendous numbers of methane that are being emitted from landfill, and it's sort of surprising always to me personally to know that we have such an incredible natural solution for waste and the systems don't exist everywhere.
Yeah.
They exist sort of only in some places.
Because methane affects the whole planet. So it's like, why are we creating solutions that are only by certain populations or different urban areas or, you know,
totally.
Farm?
And on top of that, being able to use leftovers or leftover organic waste, whatever that is, like leftover banana peels and apples and et cetera, rice, and putting it into compost and having that carbon return to the earth, sending it to landfill is just like a double waste almost.
Exactly.
You have these nutrients that can be helpful. So TEPA's vision is sort of to put your packaging, like have your packaging be compostable, have your food be compostable, put those things together, and let's just change the way that we think about waste, where everything is a resource and nothing gets wasted.
For sure. I think also like it comes hand in hand when you talk about like health products, like clothing, the fashion industry. I don't think everyone's going in being like, wow, this is so natural, but it is very confusing when you see something that's fast fashion, but it's like recycled plastic, but it's coming in plastic shipping from across the world, and they're not treating their employees with respect and fair wages, right? So it's like greenwashing. But if we're talking about a sustainable brand that is investing in getting compostable packaging to ship their clothing in, and they're treating their, you know, their factory workers with respect, and the whole system, it's a lot more fluid. I think TEPA is such an important ingredient in creating a sustainable brand instead of just having like one section that is greenwashy. Like, even if I walk into a health food store, everything is covered in so much plastic. I'm like, why am I buying organic lentils in thick plastic or pasta in plastic? But if the food was natural and the packaging was also going back to replenish, you know, the natural world, that makes so much more sense to me. It's so much more logical.
The same. It's the same here.
We sort of,
the way that Daphna came up with the idea, Daphna, our co-founder, and one of her sons came back from school and he kept coming back without his water bottle. And she was like, you have to come back with your water bottle. We have to recycle it. We have to reuse it. We have to think about what we're doing with our waste. And it sort of occurred to her that we would need to switch to something that's more natural in the very near future. And that's when she came up with the idea of a package that works like an orange peel or a banana peel or an apple peel that protects the thing that's inside, which is the reason that you go to a health food store and you see everything in packaging and everything in plastic. The material is amazing. And plastic is shelf stable and you can print on it and it's transparent. You can see what's inside. But to be able to take all of those qualities and turn it into something that could return to nature, for something that could fit into our natural ecosystem and not disturb it or harm it or cause any kind of permanent damage. Because you can't just ship food around the world without a package. And we use those packages, right? They have important information about ingredients. They have important information about allergies and calories and where it's shipped from and who's manufacturing it. There's branding information on there. Like, we don't always realize it because it's such a part of our everyday lives, but packaging is like a big part of how we choose our food.
Yeah. Also, just cutting down food waste, like, it's back to like composting. But if some products, you know, will last longer if they're packaged well, that would also be an environmental issue to not package it, right? So having a package that would, cut down food waste.
Produce without packaging will last significantly less time on the shelf than it will with packaging, which is why you see everything packaged in cellophane and all different kinds of plastic. But we sort of need to find a solution that doesn't also harm the environment at the same time.
So what do you like envision for the future of compostable packaging? Is Tipa as well, like, is Tipa kind of going to go into other industries besides food and fashion, or focus mostly on those and, like, you know, takeaway containers and coffee containers, and those are kind of like dealt with by other companies?
Our focus for sure for the near future, or Tipa's focus for the near future is flexible films, flexible food packaging and apparel packaging. And we're hoping that, especially with the food packaging, we can sort of encourage maybe even a larger shift to organic recycling.
How does that work?
I guess a good example is, like, if you go to a supermarket and there's a bunch of produce that's packed in compostable packaging instead of plastic packaging, or a bunch of cheeses that are packed in compostable packaging instead of conventional plastic. When those things go bad, or if those things go bad, and they do, all of their stock can go together into a compost. They don't have to waste the resources on unpackaging everything in order to put it in organic waste, which is significant, or throw it all into a landfill. And if we sort of shift the way that we see materials from things that just take, make, waste is sort of the circular economy is enemy. But, like, instead of shift our focus from using things once and throwing them in the garbage, trying to understand how we can live within this circular ecosystem and use materials that exist in the circular ecosystem, use more reusable packaging, use compostable packaging wherever it's relevant, and then even recyclable packaging for the places that it works really well. Cardboard gets recycled really well. Glass gets recycled really well. Aluminum gets recycled really well. We're sort of hoping that by using the right materials for everything, you can sort of encourage a circular shift for waste, encourage a shift toward organic recycling for food and organic materials, and just sort of have less trash in the world.
Yeah, that's kind of the goal.
I hope.
Yeah, we're creating so much trash. Okay, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned a little bit about reusing, and how would that work with manufacturing? Like, I understand there's, you know, refill shops that you can come with your own containers, and you know, you tear the container, you fill it up with your produce, with your liquids or solids or whatever food you want to get, and then that cuts down the packaging. But if that's only works at a local level, right? That can't really work at deliveries, or that'd be really expensive to ship back glass, or I don't really know how that would work. Do you have a vision for a circular economy that would be also with, you know, the companies that you guys are working with? Like, do they have anything in place that's circular that would reuse instead of just sending things also in a linear style?
It's a great question. We actually work with a company, a French company, who uses our packaging to package the dried fruit and nuts that they use in their refill stations. So even when you go to the supermarket or to like a small health food store, they're getting a shipment from somewhere and they're putting it in the refill station. Hopefully it's in a bulk packaging and then it cuts down on packaging. And this company didn't want to create waste, but they didn't have really another solution for how to ship their food around to their locations. So they're using our packaging for refill stations, which I thought was really cool. Tebas packaging is sort of, I mean, it's reusable in the sense that a Ziploc bag is reusable, that you can use it more than one time. We definitely recommend using them as bin lighters when you're finished using them for your compost. Keeps things nice and clean and they're fully home compostable. We encourage reusable packaging everywhere that you can. The idea really is that TIPA fills in the gaps, and they're pretty big gaps where people really, or companies really, don't have the option of using reusable packaging in an efficient, functional way. Food contact safety is a good example. It's not so easy to use reusable packaging when you're selling things at a retailer on a shelf. That needs to be food contact safe.
What does that mean, food contact safe?
There are a bunch of rules around the world, and I'm super not an expert on this, so I'm like almost nervous for you to quote me on it.
No pressure. Just hypothetically.
But there are a bunch of rules around the world, and they differ depending on where you're from. And in the EU, they have one set of rules, and in the US, they have a different set of rules. But you sort of, when you go to a supermarket, you want to be sure that whatever you're eating is safe.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That it hasn't been licked by anybody else or hasn't been
free
on
like
that or whatever it is. So plastic is very sterile. It's the reason why we use it in a lot of hospitals and things like that. So compostable packaging in instances like that, which looks like plastic and acts like plastic and is also food contact safe, which means whatever you're packaging in it is not going to be in contact with something that could make the food like poisonous or whatever it is.
Yeah, nothing could like leak in. Yeah, no, it's
exactly.
No, I like it because if you, it helps to understand like a paper bag might protect food from some things, but not everything. And plastic is a better guard. So this works like this is more like plastic. It just
seals differently.
Yeah,
it doesn't react to moisture in the same way. So a lot of people have been using plastic for a really long time because it sort of checks off a lot of boxes. Reusable packaging definitely checks a lot of those boxes also, but not all of them. And compostable, I mean, TIPA's compostable packaging sort of offers a solution for companies who find that they can't efficiently use reusable packaging, but don't want to produce more waste.
Yeah, makes sense. I have a question. You mentioned that like TIPA is focused on flexible packaging. Why is that? Why flexible packaging and not like hard plastics or other types of plastics?
We actually only produce flexible packaging. That's our technology. That's our material.
Mm-hmm. It's just created differently.
Yeah. Flexible packaging works a little bit differently than hard plastic, but it's also one of the most difficult plastics to recycle because it's so thin. So when if these plastics get recycled, and they sort of rarely do, what's a good example? Ziploc bags or shopping bags, if they get recycled, they're sort of downcycled into a new material that's not as strong even as the flexible plastic that it once was. So they're really hard to recycle. They're not so economically viable to recycle. There are definitely new technologies that are coming out to be able to recycle them. But what TIPA sort of offers in that market is an alternative that works similarly to, like, it works just like flexible packaging.
Yeah.
Similar to conventional plastic, but it totally decomposes at the end. So that's just, that's our material.
Yeah, it makes sense. I have a question. Okay, so I see this a lot, that when I go, this is a different type of plastic, right? This is not TIPA's world, but the thick plastics. A lot of times they're marketed as compostable, but they're not home compostable. And there's not like a compost bin at the takeout station or at the gym or wherever these cups are located. So people are thinking that they're compostable, but they end up in the landfill and pretty much act the same way as plastics, breaking down into microplastics because there's not enough oxygen to actually like do the composting, right? So does that like bother you? Because it really bothers me. I feel like these companies are lying that they're compostable, but also maybe the responsibility is on not the manufacturer, but the storefront that is like using them in their to-go cups, right? So I just like, where do you think draws the line when you guys are, you know, working with manufacturers and you're dealing with this and you're more in the field? How do you view these cups and these bioplastics?
I mean, I think it's a mistake to sort of punish the people that are trying to make the right decisions. I think mm-hmm. that with all the options available right now, it's so easy to choose something that's not compostable and to spend less money on something that will definitely go into a garbage can. I sort of look toward local to national communities to say, how come we don't have a place to put these things? Why don't I have a place to put compostable cups where I know that they'll be safely composted? If there's so much organic waste around that can be composted, why have only sort of altered the way that we think about treatment and waste pickup so that it allows us to have a place to put these things? So I think it's great. I mean, I'm so happy when I'm able to buy something that's compostable from a brand. You know, I know from speaking to a lot of our brands, it's not the cheapest decision to choose compostable.
For sure. I was even reading about that black straws are cheaper than white straws. And that's why a lot of companies have black straws, because when you're, you know, buying products in mass quantities, you really have to think about the economic reasons why to do something. And like buying a biodegradable compostable plastic is of course going to cost more money. And so it's a real setback to invest in these things that are not necessarily economically in your best interest.
Yeah. So I'm usually pretty impressed by brands who are making decisions that cost them more. But I do think that it does sort of force us to answer a question, which is, why is the only place I have to put anything either a recycling bin that sometimes works or a trash bin that goes to a landfill?
Any thoughts on answers for that?
I think that it'll change. I think that we're running out of space for landfill, at least where we live in Israel. And I think that people are starting to sort of open their eyes to the value of compost, you know, what it does for our soil. It's something that you can sell onward. Farmers buy compost. They need that nutrient-rich soil to be able to grow crops and to put carbon back into their field. So I think that it has to change, but I think that we've always been slow to do something majorly different. So it takes people like you and you know, people like Daphna to say, there has to be a better solution. Let's just find it.
Yeah. I was inquiring about compost in Tel Aviv, where I live, and they used to have a compost pickup system, and it just was not successful. There wasn't enough participants that were following the rules of composting. And I do find it, as you know, recycling has been around now for like, let's say 30, 40 years. And we still don't have a very clear understanding of what is recyclable. You know, there's people that are throwing all these different types of plastics and the levels of how clean it is or what bin they put it in. Like, it's so hard for people to agree to a certain set of rules and abide by them when it comes to like these voluntary, like feel good actions. And with compost, I see, you know, when I bring it to my local compost in Tel Aviv, some people don't put any of the dry material in it, and therefore it gets really stinky and it's not super pleasant. And like, there's ways of making compost not so smelly, but I think that I'm not even sure what the solution would be, because it has to be like so much education and how to actually be like a participant, or we have to like automate it in such an easy way that like it's a no-brainer and there's zero effort put into it, like taking out your trash. Because I think in order for it to be like accessible to everyone, it has to be foolproof. You know what I'm saying?
I think we have to do both, honestly. I mean, mm-hmm. I think you have to have, depending on where you live, some people live in more urban areas and, you know, they have less space to have an open compost in their living room. Some people live outside, you know, with a lot of outdoor space, and they can, you know, make a giant compost and use it and grow plants with it and grow, you know, fruit and vegetables. Or vegetables, I guess, predominantly fruit ground trees. But I think that we have to have both. I mean, we sort of just have to change the way that we think about waste entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And then for someone who feels like they have the space and they have the, you know, the education to take care of a compost at home, go for it. It's not unteachable. And we learn way more complicated things in school all the time. It's just something that we haven't sort of, I guess, thought to teach our kids and each other until sort of recently compost has come back in the conversation. So I think that we need both.
Yeah.
We even also need recycling. And in very specific situations, we'll probably also continue to need landfill.
I think like what you were saying before of like the shift is coming, right? I see the ads now for the new plastic tax in Israel, and it does carry a message in a very clear way. And I kind of want like a video explaining compost, because, you know, there's a few issues with food waste. Right now, our food waste is so insane that it's like the ratio of how much we're wasting in anyone's family is, on average, it's like if you go to the shopping, to go to the shopping market and you come home with 5 bags of groceries, it's like putting one of those bags straight into the trash can, right? So in Israel, where we're like, oh, the cost of living is really high and groceries are expensive, that is throwing out money every week, right? So if we put it in terms like that, where it's relatable to people and they actually feel inclined to make the shift of like, oh, what am I actually buying that I could use this week? Okay, let's cut down food waste. And then for compost, it's like I'm taking out the trash instead of just thinking of it as trash, thinking like 20 shekels worth, or putting a value on it so we can understand what that means in our life. I wish there was a system to actually value these things, because we kind of think of trash as valueless. It's literally just getting thrown away, and it's someone else's problem, and I don't know where it's going, which is going. And but there's never something neutral like that.
Money.
Yeah. The whole system of the management, you know, sorting it, recycling it costs a lot of money. Landfill space takes, you know, resources, then the pollution involved, and then climate change, when we talk about the cost of having to deal with all of the issues that are going to come in the near future, like that is going to be a huge economic issue, as well as just a human rights issue and a safety issue as well. But yeah, I'm curious.
I think that people are also starting to put a price tag on it and starting to realize the amount of money that gets wasted by not using our resources efficiently, by throwing them in the literal garbage and then paying to have them be in that garbage and paying for that garbage to be safe so it doesn't leak into the water, which we can't possibly put a price on. It's enormous. It's an enormous amount of money. So I think people are starting to put a price tag on it, and they're starting to look around and say, we're going to probably have to find another solution. And compost operators, I mean, they accept compost and they turn it into something they can sell on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much money they make off of it. And I haven't spoken to different compost operators to find out how much how much money they make off of every bag of compost, but you don't make any money off of landfill.
Yeah, I think compost probably is a better use. I mean, I'm no expert in it, but I assume you would get more money for compost than for recycled plastics, because plastics are already such a cheap material, and then it's just downgraded to a less quality plastic. Versus compost, you're kind of taking scraps and then turning it into really rich soil that you're going to be able to, it's kind of increasing the value instead of recycling is slightly decreasing, unless it's something that's endlessly recyclable. So it's kind of cool to think about.
Look that up. I wonder.
Yeah. Okay. A little homework assignment.
A homework assignment.
I love it. I was wondering, you have like all these cool anecdotes and facts. And I was wondering, what's like the coolest thing you've learned about plastic so far in your job?
It's such a cool material. I mean, it's one of the most extraordinary, versatile materials that I'm aware of. My computer's made out of plastic. My phone cover's made out of plastic. My clothing is probably made partially out of plastic.
Probably.
And the bag lining in my garbage bin plastic. And the pen next to me is made partially out of plastic. Kids' toys are plastic. They were my husband's toys from when he was a baby in San Diego.
I love that.
And I guess the thing that I can never sort of understand is like, why make a single-use item out of such an incredible material? It's so cool. My chair is made out of plastic.
Wow, you're like leading me through like a meditation right now. I feel like we're going to start a meditation. This podcast episode is going to be like, close your eyes and think about plastic. Look around your room.
Find everything in your room made out of plastic.
Honestly, it's so true. I'm literally staring at my helmet right now that's like saving my life, right? If I ever think it's plastic and all these materials that have like hidden plastics that, yeah, they're, you know, made out of plastic, which is from oil, and there's different issues involved, but like it does last me a long time. I take good care of it, and I'm thankful for the warmth it gives me. And when I think of plastic, I kind of think of how many life-saving aspects are you know, in a defibrillator or in medical supplies, right? It's so hardcore and it's tough. I love the toughness of plastic, but then I think about the silliness of plastic. Like, I think sometimes it's like, why are something so thick, like thick plastic, that you're going to use it once? And I'm just like, this is just silly. I don't know who did this, but like, this was a mistake. Like, you need
this is way too much.
Yeah.
When you put too much salt in a cookie and you're like, I don't need this.
Exactly.
It tastes better.
This is not like, you know, sweet salt. This is like just now a salt cracker cookie.
Salty piece of plastic.
Yeah. It's the right ratio of magical plastic.
Yeah. I think it really all comes down to just like being really smart about the materials that we use. Like, if you have a really strong material, you know, of titanium. I'm not going to make a straw that I throw in the garbage out of titanium. That material is so valuable. But because plastic is so cheap, it's something that we've decided could just go in the garbage. But it's a really cool material.
Yeah, it's true. And also because it's cool and we can look up to it, what Tipa's done is like look to it for inspiration to create a compostable version, right? So it's the same way as if we're looking at
but it's like compostable.
Mm-hmm. But if I'm looking at styrofoam and be like, oh, this is such bullshit, you're the worst, then I'm not going to be able to learn anything from styrofoam. But if I'm like, oh, styrofoam, you molded so cool to this container and you're protecting it. And what are you made from? And why is it so light? And looking at the positives of it and then trying to be like, oh, maybe I could make this from corn. Maybe I could, you know, you have to look at the positive sides in order to get inspiration to duplicate it in a more natural way.
Exactly.
Wow. That's a cool thought. I'm excited about that idea. I'm gonna like, you know, staring at everything in my room right now, like
finding all the polyesters.
Are you fossil fuels? Okay, so you sound like mostly very positive as opposed to most of the environmentalists I speak to. But do you ever get bummed out about the future, about the way that, well, we throw things out, about trash? When you're in this job, you're working with companies that are clearly invested in the future, but like just as a human being in society right now as well, like there's a lot of environmental fears and anxieties happening. I was just wondering how you kind of process that.
I have a lot of dreams about tsunamis. I'm not going to lie to you. I think there definitely is, especially for a lot of people in our generation, sort of this very deep understanding that we're in a lot of trouble if we don't do something immediately. And there really is less and less scientific evidence to back up anything but that happening. I'm very lucky that I get to work in a company where 99% of my day is speaking to different brands who are trying to really do whatever they can to reduce the amount of plastic that they're creating. But if we're honest, it's sort of just a drop in the bucket. There are way bigger decisions that have to be made about materials that we use and the output that we have as a society, the energy that we're using, and on and on and on. So I guess you just kind of have to like keep tracking on and doing whatever you can.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't help, I guess, to sort of, I guess I had this sort of mini epiphany a couple of years ago where I knew that something stressful was going to happen and I spent a lot of time being stressed about it. And then the thing that was stressful happened. And then I was also stressed about it. And then I felt sort of stupid that I was only stressed about it for all of the months leading up to the stress that I anyway had before it. And I thought, how much could I do if I didn't waste so much time being stressed about it and just started doing something, anything? And then I would just be stressed about it later anyway.
Yeah.
I didn't have to waste all the time. Like, I'm going to have time to be stressed about it. And I think in terms of climate, it's really important that we continue to act and that we continue to be thoughtful in our actions and thoughtful about the things that we consume and thoughtful about where our resources are going, where our brain power is going. And I don't want to waste so much of it being stressed out about climate change. I want to sort of be able to put all that energy into, okay, what can I do today? What can I do in this hour? What can I do in the next 5 minutes that it could make even like the smallest difference? And it doesn't mean spending your entire day like picking up trash, but it does mean like if you're on a walk with your kid or with your friend and you see a piece of garbage on the floor, like pick it up. It does make a difference. I wish that it went to somewhere other than landfill, but that's something that I can think about in the next hour. But I do feel very lucky that I work at TIPA and I get a chance to really do something about it every day.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I was wondering, does TIPA also kind of work with other environmental, I don't know how to word this in a way that's like actually makes sense, but the manufacturing process, like, do you guys like want to have renewable energy as a source for the energy to create this plastic? Is it kind of like this like holistic mindset, or is it mostly focused on like waste management?
We're mostly focused on the end of life of plastic packaging. We have a bunch of manufacturers around the world who manufacture TIPA's packaging. The way that TIPA manufactures is that we don't have our own manufacturing facility. We created a product that could be manufactured just like any other kind of plastic. And sort of the reasoning behind this was to create a business that everyone would be able to use around the world. And there wouldn't be any kind of like specific companies that would be able to manufacture our packaging. There wouldn't be any specific companies that would have any kind of, what's the word?
Like, it's more systematically accessible for different factories to be able to make it versus just like one factor making it.
Exactly. So it sort of depends on the factory.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a client who works with a specific converter in Germany, they can send our films to their converter in Germany and they'll be able to make packaging for them without making major changes in their supply chain. And that's a really big factor for a lot of companies that we work with. So we didn't want to create a packaging that would only be able to be manufactured in a certain way. On the flip side, we're thrilled when people manufacture it locally or when they manufacture it in an energy-saving way. And we work with a few converters who have really decided to become as sustainable as possible. And they have solar panels on their roofs and they only use sustainable materials. And it's a huge pleasure for us to see that. Because we think, I mean, the statistics are showing that packaging is sort of leading in that direction of more sustainable materials, more sustainable manufacturing practices. So we hope that TIPA can just be a big part of that.
Okay, cool. I love that. And I was wondering, besides dreams of tsunamis, do you have any dreams of what would happen if we succeeded in fighting plastic pollution? What would be like the utopian, if we could get everyone on board with this dream, what would it look like?
It's a lot of hiking.
Yeah.
I think one of the first times that I actually met my husband's family, we went on a hike together and I left with like a shopping bag that I found on the ground full of garbage. And I was just sort of hoping that they didn't, like, they would appreciate it and they wouldn't think I was a little bit too quirky.
And did
they? I would love to just, I mean, I'm quirky regardless. I don't think I had a chance. But his sisters joined in and we all got together where we collected garbage. And how nice would it be if we didn't collect garbage while we were outside? There's really it doesn't just stay in the trash. Like, even if it goes in the trash and it blows out in the wind and it gets into these gorgeous ecosystems that, you know, God created for us. And it's just so, it would be so beautiful to just walk outside and not see garbage.
Yeah.
And it's impossible now. I don't think there's anywhere you can go without seeing garbage anymore.
Yeah, it's true. I had a realization when I was on the beach, you know, looking at all this trash. I was like, how much is it like people actually throwing, you know, garbage into the water or leaving at the beach? Or how much is it just like blown off? Because sometimes we have these storms and the trash cans are just like empty because all this lightweight plastic is just blown off into the ocean. And, you know, living in Tel Aviv is something I see on the daily. You know, if I live near a river, I would see it there, or in the forest, I would see it there. But, you know, look around for wherever you're living in the world and see how trash is impacting that beauty and that ecosystem and that surrounding. And it just feels very personal.
Yeah.
I want to ask if you had a favorite quote or book or a podcast that you recommended about environmental thoughts. That's no pressure.
I know. Off the top of your head. The truth is, and this is wildly open, but I'm an Orthodox Jewish woman and I read a lot of the Torah. And one of the biggest inspirations that I have really are the rules that we have there about how we're meant to treat the land.
Yeah.
And this year, actually in Israel, there's like a thing that we do where, according to the Torah and religious law, and it's sort of interpreted in a lot of different ways, we let the land rest. It's an entire year called Shemitah, where we let the land rest and we don't plant anything and we don't cultivate and we just let the world, we let our specific field or whatever little plot of something that you own just rest for the year. And I think that there's a lot of really, really good insight in that book about how we're meant to treat the earth and what it does for us and how important it is for us to sort of take care of each other. I don't know if it's like the right thing to do to recommend reading the Torah, but I definitely recommend taking insight from, you know, whatever teachers you have in your life, whatever book it is, to try to see, you know, what insight that book has about what's the best way to treat each other, treat the world.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Very open.
Great. There's so many. I think that's so wise to like look at the resources that are already in your life, and you'll find, you know, the lessons about the planet and about respecting resources and rethinking different actions, and it'll be relevant. A few episodes ago, I interviewed Akiva Gersh, who's a rabbi and works in environmental education, and now he has a course about veganism. And it's like incredible the amount of sources from the Torah and from different rabbis throughout the generations that are such a strong basis for veganism. And even though it's not widely accepted in Judaism nowadays that we like focus on those aspects, but there are a lot of rules about how to respect belongings and how to respect the planet and not wasting resources. And you were saying about Shemitah, we are a very agriculturally focused nation and culture.
Hugely.
And we totally forget about that. And composting is all about refocusing the fact that no matter what you're doing with your everyday, you know, belongings or what you're buying or what you're eating, like there is a source of agricultural like connection there. And it kind of brings you back to the farm. Even if you're in a city, no matter where you are in the world, you're connected to a farm because you're eating something. And also the waste can be connected to a farm. And I think that's cool to also bring back not only letting the land rest, but also giving the land what it deserves and the respect it deserves.
Yeah.
Cool. We solved everything. Great. No problem.
It's just about intention.
Yeah.
A lot of action that comes with it, but a lot of it starts from intention and mm-hmm. sort of and gratitude for what we have and understanding that those things are connected.
Yeah. What kind of intention should we set with this meditation about plastics?
What are we using? I feel like I wish everybody just thought about it all the time. Like, what am I using? What am I using with my board? Even as it extends out to what you're doing all the time. But what are the things that I'm using? What's the energy that I'm using right now? What am I eating? What am I wearing? Just like be really thoughtful about the materials that you use.
Wow. I'm so zoomed out. I'm like, I'm using this microphone. It was created in this country. I'm using this electricity. I'm powered into the wall here. Wow. Yeah.
And
it's a trip.
You don't feel like you need to buy more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I have so many things.
Oh, I love that. Yes. When you gain the gratitude of what you're actually using right now, it's very full.
I just like a bag of maternity clothes. Like, first of all, it cost me no money. Second of all, I got to reuse them.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, my coworker brought them in. They essentially appeared without even having to go to a store right next to me. And I thought, why does anybody buy anything new?
Yeah. So true.
There's so much stuff around.
Yeah, we have so much clothing. We don't need any more clothing. And I love fashion. You know, vintage is where it's at. Reusing, all these buy nothing groups and sharing with friends and neighbors. That is sustainable community at its finest. I have a resource. I want you to use this resource too, you know?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. A call to action for the Zevil Rebels listening. What's one thing they can do to rebel against plastic pollution? You already talked about going hiking and picking up trash along the way, but what's something they could do to mitigate their plastic use?
Do more than one thing.
Multitask.
Yeah. I feel like my best piece of advice would just like to be Demi. There's way more than one thing that you can do. But secondhand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, create a community around you of people who have used stuff that you can use afterwards and give
like
back.
Like maternity clothing,
kids' toys, share food, share love.
Wow, kids' toys is such a thing. We have, you know, I have like 5 nieces and nephews, and watching them wear the clothing that I wore when I was a kid or play with the toys that I used to play. Not only is it like so fun to like live nostalgically through them of like, this is something that I enjoyed and that you're enjoying, but like it honestly was created, like talking about how amazing plastic is. These plastic toys are like in really good condition still, you know, like it lasts a while and it's so fun. And I think that if we can make that as culturally normal and accepted and exciting and trendy as possible, like we got to keep on celebrating reusing instead of just buying new toys all the time.
Definitely.
Any last words?
No.
Yeah, you're just like still meditating. My brain is, you know, cloud right now. Okay, so I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for joining me today, Rebecca. This was really fun. I didn't expect meditating or talking about Torah, so I appreciate that. And I really loved how you like talked about Tipa's mission, but also like brought in some of the stories. So thank you so much. And to the Zevil Rebels listening, if you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, please share it with a friend or two who would also gain from this conversation. And then join me next week as I speak to member of the Knesset, Alon Tal, woot woot, fangirl, about his work in establishing major sustainable institutions like Adam Tavadin, who you guys heard about from one of the previous episodes. And we're going to be talking about pushing for environmental policy and what it is to deal with other Knesset members on the Knesset floor. So I'm really excited for that conversation. I hope you guys are too. And until then, stay rebellious. Bye, Rebels.